This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Mind's Eye.
Welcome to the Military Times. My name is Mark Love, and our first article comes from the front page. Army moves ahead on plans to replace storied Bradley fighting vehicle, dated October 16, 2024. Detroit Arsenal, Michigan. Two industry teams competing to design a Bradley infantry fighting vehicle replacement have completed preliminary design reviews, clearing a hurdle ahead of the next milestone in 2025. Major General Glenn Dean, Army Program Executive Officer for Ground Combat Systems, said, American Rheinmetall Vehicles and General Dynamics Land Systems were chosen from a pool of bidders in June 2023 to continue into a detailed design phase of the XM-30 mechanized infantry combat vehicle. Both teams are designing a hybrid vehicle featuring a suite of lethal capabilities to include a 50mm cannon, a remote turret, anti-tank guided missiles, machine guns employed through an advanced third-generation forward-looking infrared sensor, an integrated protection suite, kitted armor, and signature management capabilities, as well as intelligent fire control, according to Army officials. The total value of both contracts is approximately $1.6 billion. The overall program is expected to be worth about $45 billion, according to the Army. The last preliminary design review wrapped up in August, and the service will have a quick turnaround to complete critical design reviews in order to begin building physical prototypes, Dean said in an interview ahead of the Association of the U.S. Army's annual conference this week. At that point, when the design is final, all the elements and parts are defined, and at that point, the contractor is ordering all the material to build prototypes, Dean said. Prototypes will take 18 to 20 months to construct after the critical design reviews wrap up. Once prototypes are delivered, the Army will move into a test and evaluation phase with both competitors before deciding on a winner in fiscal 2027. The first vehicles are expected to be fielded in fiscal year 2029. The Army is moving on an aggressive schedule between completion of a preliminary design review and a critical design review, Dean said. Such a schedule is possible because of the designs taking place in a digital engineering environment and frequent soldier touch points in physical and virtual mock-ups. Colonel Kevin Bradley, who is in charge of combat vehicle modernization within the Army Futures Command, said in the same interview, having soldiers get in and actually see what the seating in the back looked like, how their evacuation drills would go, definitely was beneficial to both vendors and giving them feedback to help adjust designs and better suit what we were looking for in the requirements, he said. I would say we've had everything from small user interface change-ups into one case, as least as a fairly significant structural change to the base design, Dean said. There are some fairly dramatic shifts, and this is the time to do them. American Rheinmetall Defense's team includes Textron Systems, RTX, L3 Harris Technologies, and Allison Transmission, as well as artificial intelligence-focused company Anduril Technologies. GDLS is teamed up with GM Defense, Apply Intuition, a specialist in modeling and simulating autonomy for the automobile industry, and AeroVironment, which is providing its switchblade loitering munitions for integration into the design. GDLS also continues to work with General Dynamics Mission Systems to incorporate networks, radio gear, and cyber capabilities. And in our next article, Ukraine. White House approves $425 million in new Ukraine aid, dated October 16, 2024. The White House on Wednesday announced its latest package of military support for Ukraine, including $425 million worth of air defense, air-to-ground missiles, armored vehicles, and other munitions. President Joe Biden spoke Wednesday morning with his Ukrainian counterpart, Vladimir Zelensky, before the White House announced the latest round of aid to help Kyiv in its ongoing war against Russia's invasion. The two leaders discuss the state of the war and a victory plan Zelensky has touted to end the conflict, according to a readout of the call. The Ukrainian president publicly discussed that plan for the first time in a speech before the country's parliament Wednesday, arguing that his framework could halt the war by the end of 2025. Zelensky described five main points, chief among them membership in NATO and long-term military support from the West. This week's package includes many of those weapons Ukraine needs most, though it solely involves equipment America has sent in the past. The White House's authority to send more assistance was set to expire at the end of September, forcing the president to designate the aid toward the existing list of approved system. The White House pledged that within months the U.S. would send hundreds of air defense interceptors and dozens of smaller air defense systems, both of which have become invaluable as they are scarce 2.5 years into the war. Russia has consistently overwhelmed Ukraine's air defenses with cheap drones and ballistic missiles and attacks on military and civilian targets. Kyiv is bracing for more such attacks heading into the winter as Ukraine struggles with a damaged power grid. Pentagon release specified that the air defense ammunition would include interceptors for National Advanced Surface-to-Air Missile Systems, or NASAMS. The package also features artillery and thousands of armored vehicles, according to the White House. Biden has intended to host an October summit of leaders from countries supporting Ukraine's self-defense, but canceled to help coordinate the response to Hurricane Milton. The White House said that meeting will now occur virtually in November. Meanwhile, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin flew to Brussels Wednesday for meetings with his NATO counterparts. Austin will later attend a summit of defense ministers from the G7, a group of developed countries where support for Ukraine will be on the docket. And next article, after 9 grueling months at sea, USS Theodore Roosevelt is home. The aircraft carrier Theodore Roosevelt returned home to San Diego on Tuesday following a 9-month deployment that saw its West Pacific crews detoured to the Middle East as war threatened to break out between Israel and Iran. TR was rushed to the Middle East in July after East Coast carrier Dwight D. Eisenhower was wrapping up its own extended deployment battling missile and drone salvos fired by Iran-backed Houthi rebels in Yemen. Carrier presence in the Middle East has traditionally been handled by Virginia-based carriers, but none of those carriers were ready to replace Ike, prompting TR's diversion to the region. As tensions have ebbed and flowed this year, TR operated alongside fellow West Coast carrier Abraham Lincoln in the Middle East before departing those waters in September and heading home. The strike group's ability to quickly adjust from operations in the West Pacific to the Middle East is a testament to both the flexibility of our naval forces as well as the strength and training of our Navy sailors. Carrier Strike Group 9 Commander Rear Admiral Christopher Alexander said in a statement, Theodore Roosevelt's strike group includes Carrier Air Wing 11, the cruiser Lake Erie, the destroyers Russell, Halsey, John S. McCain, and Daniel Inouye. Lake Erie and McCain remain deployed to the West Pacific, the Navy said, while other strike group warships have returned to their home ports. Strike group sailors flew more than 9,000 sorties and logged 21,000 flight hours, while steaming more than 71,000 nautical miles and conducting 28 at-sea resupplies, according to the Navy. Those sailors also did port calls in Bahrain, Diego Garcia, Guam, the Republic of Korea, Singapore, and Thailand. The crew worked incredibly hard and maintained mission focus this entire deployment, Captain Brian Shrum, Theodore Roosevelt's commanding officer, said in a statement. I am extremely proud of our sailors and the work accomplished across the world's oceans to keep our nations safe at home. Supreme Court hears arguments on Veterans Benefits Appeals rules. The Supreme Court heard oral arguments Wednesday in a veterans benefits case, which could have wide-ranging impact on applicants' options to appeal decisions denying them payouts. Justices likely won't rule on the case Bufkin v. McDonough for months, but the issues involved are being closely monitored by veterans advocates and Department of Veterans Affairs leaders, given the potential changes mandated by the eventual decision. At issue is how the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims and other judicial review boards must interpret the benefit of the doubt. Rule regarding veterans' disability claims. Under federal statutes, VA adjudicators are required to rule in favor of veterans applying for benefit support, where there's an approximate balance of positive and negative evidence. Advocates have long argued that VA does not follow that standard, requiring veterans to prove their injuries and eligibility beyond doubt to receive payouts. In 2002, Congress passed legislation requiring the Veterans Appeals Court to ensure the benefit of the doubt rule was followed promptly in the disability claims process, but court officials have argued that only applies in cases of clear errors and does not mandate a full review of the case evidence. The case before the Supreme Court centers on two veterans, Joshua Bufkin, who served in the Air Force from 2005 and 2006, and Norman Thornton, who served in the Army from 1988 to 1991. Both men apply for disability benefits related to injuries they say occurred while serving. Bufkin was denied a claim for post-traumatic stress disorder, while Thornton was granted a 10% rating for the same condition. Both appealed the decision and lost. Lawyers for the men said that the subsequent judicial reviews did not conduct a full review of the case, to include whether the benefit of the doubt standard was followed. A federal appeals court ruled 2 years ago that such a move was not needed. In arguments before the Supreme Court Tuesday, Melanie Boswick, counsel for the plaintiffs, said that the language adopted by Congress clearly mandates that an appeals panel has to do a check and make sure that the decisions it is about to affirm complied with the law. But lawyers for the government argued that requiring a full additional review of evidence would be duplicative and inefficient. In a supporting brief filed ahead of Wednesday's arguments, officials from the National Veterans Legal Services Program lamented that federal officials' current practices have ensured that it is the agency that gets the benefit of the doubt, not veterans. It exacerbates the very problems Congress sought to solve through its legislation. Similarly, officials from Disabled American Veterans offered support for the plaintiffs and said the case presents a question that is important to the nation's disabled veterans and their families, calling the current review procedures troubling. A final decision on the case is expected from the Supreme Court next spring. And in our next article, your military. Two Navy EA-18G Growler crew members missing after crash. Two crew members from a U.S. Navy EA-18G Growler jet based out of Naval Station Whidbey Island, Washington, are missing after the aircraft crashed Tuesday. The fighter jet assigned to Electronic Attack Squadron 130 crashed east of Mount Rainier at approximately 3:20 p.m. local time, while it conducted a routine training flight, according to the Navy. Multiple search and rescue assets, including a U.S. Navy MH-60S helicopter, launched from NAS Whidbey Island to locate the crew and examine the crash site, the Navy said in a statement. As of 7 p.m. on October 15th, the status of the two crew members remains unknown. The cause of the crash is under investigation. No additional details were provided. Electronic Attack Squadron 130, known as the Zappers, completed a deployment to the Middle East with Carrier Air Wing 3 embarked on the aircraft carrier Dwight D. Eisenhower in July. Whidbey Island is the home to most EA-18G squadrons. The aircraft is a variant of the F/A-18 Super Hornet and features an electronic warfare suite. In our next article, game-changing, Navy reloads cruiser's missiles at sea for first time. The Navy resupplied a warship's weapons at sea for the first time last week, providing what Navy Secretary Carlos Del Toro called a game-changing update in combat readiness for the surface fleet. The cruiser Chosin and its sailors employed the transferable reload at sea method device known as TRAM to load the ship's MK-41 vertical launching system off the coast of San Diego on Friday. The TRAM prototype allows warships to rearm during the underway replenishment process when supply ships deliver fuel, food, and other critical supplies. This ability to reload at sea rather than at shore saves time for combatant ships and keeps them in the fight instead of having to go into port to reload, according to the service. For the at-sea demonstration, the Chosen teamed up with the Military Sealift Command, Dry Cargo and Ammunition Ship Washington Chambers, to connect and transfer the missile canister to the cruiser. The team then utilized TRAM to transport the missile canister along rails connected to the cruiser's VLS modules to successfully place it into a VLS cell, the Navy said. The Navy plans to field TRAM in the next 2 to 3 years. Today, we proved just how game-changing TRAM truly is and what a powerful deterrent it will be to our competitors, Del Toro said in a statement. This demonstration marks a key milestone on the path to perfecting this capability and fielding it for sustained operations at sea. He first outlined TRAM as one of his top priorities in 2022 during a speech at Columbia University, calling it a sustained, persistent forward strike capacity during wartime. The Navy previously tested a land-based demonstration of TRAM in July at the Naval Surface Warfare Center, Port Hueneme Division in California. In our next article, new program aims to help DoD civilians in Japan get better health care. Thousands of Defense Department civilians in Japan may get some help with access to local medical care under a new pilot program, but advocates are skeptical and point to continuing flaws in the system. The 9-month pilot program for supplemental health support services begins January 1st and runs through September 29th, according to the DoD announcement. About 11,000 DoD civilians working in Japan will be eligible, ranging from commissary employees to DoD teachers and civilian health care providers, among others. Civilians will enroll during the year benefits open season from November 11th to December 9th. Defense Health Agency officials will announce more details about the program before the federal benefits open season begins. To be eligible, the employee must be enrolled in a participating health plan through the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program. DoD recognizes the significant contributions of our DoD civilian workforce around the world. We owe it to our civilians to facilitate access to health care no matter where they are, Ashish Vazirani, Acting Under Secretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness, said in DoD's announcement. The DoD established a pilot after a year-long effort to identify the concerns, according to the press release. While DoD civilian access to health care in Japan has been a long-standing problem, critics say the situation worsened in 2022 when a Defense Health Agency restricted access to military treatment facilities in Japan, forcing many DoD civilians to depend on Japanese medical facilities. Medical billing has been one issue for the DoD civilians in Japan. Japan Civilian Medical Advocacy, a grassroots advocacy program, says they welcome DoD's step to address the longstanding lack of medical access, but are concerned that the steps don't go far enough and should be addressed immediately. The program will include agreements with the insurance carriers who provide coverage under the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program in Japan to establish direct billing. The non-appropriated fund employees in Japan are eligible for the program if they're enrolled in an Aetna international plan. Through a $4.2 million contract in International SOS Government Services Incorporated, the Defense Health Agency will provide a 24/7 call center staffed with bilingual representatives to help identify needs, make appointments with health care providers, and issue payment guarantees up front, according to the DoD announcement. International SOS is also the prime contractor for the TRICARE Overseas Program. But the proposed direct billing agreements are similar to existing international SOS supplemental services, which have historically encountered substantial challenges, the civilian advocacy group said in a statement. Japanese medical facilities retain the right to deny care at any time, even to active duty service members in life-threatening emergencies, the group said. Moreover, the availability of health care providers who meet U.S. standards remains insufficient. Dependents of these civilians aren't eligible for these services during the pilot program, which is a significant oversight, the group said. Many of the most pressing healthcare challenges we encounter involve pregnancy, postpartum care, mental health, and pediatric cases, issues that impact entire families and ultimately affect mission readiness, according to the advocacy group's statement. There is also uncertainty about whether contractor employees and employees on temporary duty overseas are eligible for the pilot program. Active duty service members and TRICARE Prime beneficiaries have priority in receiving health care in military hospitals and clinics based on current federal law and DoD policy. DoD civilians who aren't TRICARE beneficiaries are allowed to use military medical facilities on a space available basis. Even DoD civilian medical providers can't get care at the military hospitals in Japan where they are providing care except on a space available basis. And in our next article, from CAMO-GPT to life skills, the Army is changing how it trains its troops. Dated October 16, 2024. As the Army has adjusted its doctrine and modernized how it prepares soldiers for leadership and combat, the Services Training and Doctrine Command touches nearly every aspect of those initiatives. Over the past year, new programs and updates to existing training have flowed across the force. Army Times spoke with General Gary Brito, head of Training and Doctrine Command, about some of these areas and what they mean for new and career soldiers. Brito took over his current command in 2022 after serving as the Army's Deputy Chief of Staff over personnel. The four-star has a deep personal history within Army training, having served as commander over the Joint Readiness Training Center at Fort Johnson, Louisiana, and twice serving as a National Training Center at Fort Irwin, California, earlier in his career, according to his official biography. This Q&A has been edited for length and clarity. What are some additions or changes to Army training from this past year that readers might not have encountered? General Gary Brito, over the past year, we've made significant improvements to our initial entry training and professional military education. Some of the programs include the Quickfire Observation Portal that was created by the Center for Army Lessons Learned. The portal is a web and mobile application that allows users to submit observations. We've added foundational skills development to our curriculum. This training promotes skill-specific proficiency, cohesion among soldiers, and camaraderie while also aiming to lower harmful behaviors. The foundational skills include such areas as life skills, from financial planning and time management to suicide prevention and resilience training. We've updated how we consider the operational environment in all that we do to plan for potential large-scale combat. That document was released earlier this year and explains the current operational environmental considerations all soldiers should understand. We've also expanded basic combat training, adding more training companies to Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, and Fort Sill, Oklahoma. Senior leaders gauge readiness by how units perform at combat training centers, what's going on to prepare for and take home lessons from a center rotation. Our Mission Command Training Program and Warfighter Exercises give corps and divisions a chance to conduct collective training at scale with multinational partners. The Mission Command Program specifically focuses on leader development by advising, observing, and consulting commanders on how they run their units and how to improve. We also host quarterly General Officer Steering Committee meetings. That Army Lessons Learned Forum captures gaps, issues, and lessons learned from commanders in various theaters. That forum generates a list of recommended solutions to tactical and operational level concerns that's disseminated across Army leadership. How is the Army modernizing its force while still training new and experienced soldiers on evolving doctrine, new equipment, and fundamental soldiering? We are making changes to our program of instruction to accelerate training development. Across our centers of excellence, we incorporate observations and lessons learned to adjust curriculum, training events, and cadre and faculty development. We're introducing tools and practices such as artificial intelligence, machine learning, and human-machine integration. For example, at the Maneuver Center of Excellence at Fort Moore, Georgia, the center has developed and updated various Army training publications to address the use of small drones, counter-drone, and aspects of electromagnetic warfare into our courses. MCOE team partnered with Army Futures Command is experimenting with robotic-enabled maneuver, introducing air and ground robots into live, virtual, and constructive training across the spectrum of our courses, from basic training to the captain's career course. What are some programs or initiatives you can highlight in Army training for the coming year? TRADOC is integrating data literacy into Army professional military education. New data literacy curriculums are being developed for the Basic Officer Leader Course, Warrant Officer Candidate Course, Basic Leader Course, and Advanced Leader Course. The Cyber Center of Excellence initiated a proof of concept for CamoGPT, a generative AI application that improves productivity and operational readiness at all echelons. Like ChatGPT, the CamoGPT uses a large language model to incorporate data from Joint and Army doctrine, lessons learned, best practices, and TRADOC content among our sources. The reconfigurable virtual collective trainer is being delivered to the force. It is a hardware system that connects to the Army's synthetic training environment. Users can access collective mixed reality training scenarios. It has a heads-up display, high-resolution monitor, and controllers. This gives soldiers, squads, platoons, and companies the ability to navigate exercises using real and computer-generated movements. The trainers, which have been installed at Fort Moore, Georgia, and Fort Cavazos, Texas, will allow for collective training with the Abrams tank, Bradley infantry fighting vehicle, Stryker, and dismounted troops. We're also working to add future vehicle variants and their capabilities, such as the M1256/A1 infantry carrier vehicle Stryker and maneuver short-range air defense systems. In our next article, how's the Army improving care to keep soldiers alive in the field? The Army is revamping how it provides life-saving care in the field, including new hospital setup gear, ways to preserve blood on the front lines, and a new combat-ready respirator to keep wounded soldiers breathing. Over the past year, Program Executive Officer Soldier added medical devices to its portfolio of all things soldier, which includes clothing, weapons, body armor, and a host of other items. The 1945th Medical Detachment is slated to stand up in late 2025 and will hold three prolonged care augmentation detachments, or PCADS, officials said. Well, I'm afraid this is all the time we have for now. Thank you for joining us for Military Times. My name is Mark Love, and I hope that you'll join us next time.